Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Big Game Indicating Dogs Q&A. Just a quick one today. Three questions. I'm going to keep it pretty short and to the point. First question is from Chris. Hi, mate. Bit of an odd one for you. I've got myself a German Shepherd who is about 18 months old. I've trained it in obedience to walk by my side and out in front. I've also followed some of the blueprint on long lines and holding range, etc. I've been noticing lately that she's starting to show interest in wind-scenting kangaroos, foxes, etc. from the backyard. If I didn't know better, I would say she should have pointer in her. As when she wind-scents a roo, then sights it, she holds and looks at me for the next move. How should I incorporate the blueprint into my day-to-day training if one day I want to take her out for deer? So, get this question quite a bit, and I mean, for you, if you've done some other forms of training and you've done some blueprint stuff but not all of it, it's basically the same as anyone that's starting on the blueprint with an older dog. I get that question quite often, like, Paul, I'm starting on the blueprint with an older dog. What part should I start? And they'll say, like, obviously I don't need to start at part one because my dog's not a puppy, so what part should I start at if my dog's, you know, this old or X amount of months old? And what I always recommend people to do with, if you're retraining a dog with the blueprint, starting with an older dog, or if you've done some of the blueprint but not all of it, go right back to the start. Or if you're starting fresh with an older dog, start right at the start and work your way through, and just anything that your dog's already doing, just skip it, and anything that your dog's not doing, that your dog hasn't got sorted, work on that. So that's basically it. Start right at the start and work your way through the whole lot, skipping anything that you don't need to work on and working on the things that you do need to work on. Even if your dog's like 7 years old or so older, just start right at the start and work your way through, because there's a lot of really important principles and ideas and techniques, and we go over the long line and lots of things starting right at part one, and some really important key principles and techniques there for any dog at any age in part one. And so start there and just work your way through. And with an older dog that already has some good training in it, you're going to be able to work through it a lot faster, you know, in some cases way, way faster. But it is definitely important to start at the start, work your way through, checking off everything as you go through. Again, skipping the things that you don't need to work on, working on the things you do need to work on, and also just getting a good picture of the whole system, how it works, and the way it all ties into each other is really, really important. James, hi Paul, can you discuss etiquette around visiting a hut with a dog? Time code, I'm just remembering time code. You guys told me you like those time codes. So you can click straight to the questions on YouTube. Paul, can you discuss etiquette around visiting a hut with your dog? Secondly, on that topic, I'm super paranoid about poison baits and bait stations you often find at huts. How do you manage this hazard with your dog? Thanks. So etiquette around visiting a hut with your dog is just mainly common sense stuff, you know. And, I mean, the most important thing in the first place is that your dog is well-trained. And that is going to, that's going to take care of 90% of it, you know, and then it's just common sense on your behalf. So if your dog's well-trained, it's got good manners, it's well under control. In the Deer Dog Training Blueprint, we actually go over that whole system, in the blueprint of getting your dog happy. And well, right at the start, we start with separation so your dog doesn't have any separation anxiety. So you can put it in a kennel, put it on its own in your truck, in a kennel, in a crate, basically anywhere by the end of it, and your dog's happy and comfortable. If you've set it up in a good, safe place, the dog's happy and comfortable. You know, it's got shade if it's hot. It's warm enough and sheltered enough if it's cold. All of those things. If you set your dog up in a safe, comfortable spot, the dog knows that it's safe and it'll be happy and relaxed there. That's a huge one around huts, that a dog isn't barking or whining or niggly in the middle of the night making noise and annoying people. And in the blueprint, we actually go that step further for this exact reason, actually. I show you how to introduce your dog to being on a chain and all the ins and outs of using a chain, how to get your dog happy and comfortable being on a chain. And I also show you how I set up a tarp in the bush. So for this exact instance, when we're going out into the bush and we're staying in huts and we're camping and we're staying different places, but particularly in public huts with other people there, theoretically, by the rules, we're not meant to take dogs inside public huts in New Zealand. So in the blueprint, I show you how to have your dog happy and comfortable on a chain, how to set up a nice little tarpaulin set up out the back of the hut for your dog and have your dog happy and comfortable and safe in there. In the blueprint, I show you how I get Print used to that and how you can get your dog used to that. That's all in there. And it's definitely, if you're heading into the hills, it's going to a public hut, it's always important to have your dog used to being on its own outside, and it can go on a chain, and it's used to that, and that you've got your chain and you've got everything you need to have a comfortable little setup for your dog outside of the hut. Because at the end of the day, that's what you're supposed to do here. You're not meant to have dogs in huts. And even if you do want to push the boundaries a little bit and take the dog inside, and which, by the way, I don't think there's anything crazy wrong with that. If the dog's well trained, and it's house trained and everything, it's going to be fine inside the hut, and it's out of the way, and it's not going to be getting up and walking around and annoying people and doing anything silly. If it's crappy weather outside and all of that, and you can lay your jacket in a nice out of the way corner in the hut, and bring your dog inside and tell it to get on your bed, like the jacket that you lay down. I have a on your bed command. Basically, anything I lay down for the dog, if I lay down a shirt, a jacket, a blanket, anything, and point at it and say on your bed, the dogs just jump straight on that. And they know, once I lay something down and tell them to get on it, if they know that that's their spot in that area, whatever I've put on the ground, and any other time I just point at it and say, on your bed, they know exactly what I mean, and they go over and jump straight on it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that if your dog's well set up and you can bring it inside and you can tuck it away in a corner, out of the way, laying on a jacket, all comfortable and that, and provided everyone is okay with that, I don't see how that's like a massive problem. But you do have to be prepared to be able to keep your dog outside, and I think it's important for that. And probably one other thing that I've seen too a few times is just, particularly when you're out hunting and that, is just be very mindful of your dog, that it's either warm enough if it's cold, that it's cool enough if it's hot, that it doesn't, that it's got water and obviously food as well. But water's a real common one that I've seen people slip up on, and, you know, they're cruising around, the dog's there, the dog's missioning around, and they just haven't thought about water. And it's like, oh, when's your dog last had a drink? and you know, you see the dog trying to drink out of some crappy little puddle next to the hut or something, or it's licking all the dew off the grass, and you're like, when's your dog last had a drink? And they're like, oh yeah, no, it was a while ago actually, and because they might have hiked in that day, and they left home at 5 o'clock that morning. It's now 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they've been drinking out of drink bottles and stuff, but and they might have walked past water, but the dog might not have stopped. The dog might have wanted to be like keeping up with them or something, and the dog hasn't had a proper chance to drink. And you offer the dog some water, and it like drinks like crazy. It was really thirsty, you know. So all of those sorts of things, but like I say, if the dog's well trained and the blueprint gives you all of the tools for that, even right down to going as far as showing you how to put it on a chain, showing you how to, you know, you get some really small, tiny little lightweight tarpaulins now that, and you can basically set up like a little dog kennel out the back of the hut with a tarp and chain your dog up under that, and it can be happy as. If you are somewhere where you can bring the dog inside, you know, and you can put it, just lay your jacket down or something and it can sit on that, then that's good. But it's just common sense, you know. And also, you know, any time you're out in the bush hunting, particularly with dogs, you know, every hunter is a representative of all hunters. So it's really good and really important to put our best foot forward there, not annoy anyone, and be polite around huts and when you meet other people and ask them, oh, is it okay if I do this? Is it okay if my dog sleeps here? Have you guys got enough room? How's your gear? You know, it's always good to be, especially as a hunter, every hunter's an ambassador for all hunters, so it's really good to be really considerate around huts, and run things by people and just try to get on with people as well as you can, particularly with your dog, you know. And the last thing you want is your dog being a nuisance, whether it's being over friendly and it's not chained up and it's like walking around visiting everybody, or it's whining at night, or fidgeting around and things like that. You don't want that, you know. You want your dog, A, to be really well looked after, and you want to be seen to be looking after your dog really well, and you don't want your dog to be a nuisance to anyone. And again, that's a huge part of why it's so important to have a well-trained dog. Like, a huge part of training a good hunting dog is so that it hunts well and it's under control and all of that. But a huge part of that too, and there's loads of that in the blueprint, is just all of those life skills that you need in a dog so it's practical, and not a nuisance, and it's happy and all of that. And that's all the kenneling, separation, that it's happy on a chain, happy in a kennel, has a good stop. You can tell it to sit down and stay and lay down and it'll happily stay there, and all of those sorts of things. It's really important. the other question about poison baits and bait stations around huts. This is another time code, isn't it? It's a good point, and it's something that I'm always aware of, because I've been around huts a lot, and even back in the trapping days and that. And you often see, you know, you often turn up to a hut and someone's written in the hut book, oh, threw rat bait under the hut, and they'll write the date and stuff like that, sort of, I don't know, they think it's good. And it's an interesting one, and I've actually talked about it on the podcast before. And, you know, like, if you're going to set a possum trap on dockland, you need a permit, and it's quite a big drama. If you want to set 1080 on public, not 1080, sorry. If you want to use cyanide on public land to hunt possums for skin or skins or fur, man, you need to notify. It's a massive drama. You need to put signs up at all of the ends of the tracks and roads entering the bush. You need to, I can't remember what the hell it was, but you need to, who do you need to notify? You need to notify like the councils and I don't know, wanted to say it's like notify nearby schools or something. I've done it a couple of times back in the day. I had my cyanide license and did a bit. But man, it was a rigmarole. You had to like go around the district notifying all these people and fill out all this paperwork and like all the stuff to lay cyanide to kill possums. And fair enough too, you know, you're putting poison in the bush. 1080, they put signs up everywhere. And they have to go through a big rigmarole for that. But then you get these people that don't do any of that and they just biff a heap of rat bait around huts. And it's bloody dangerous. It's pretty gross in a lot of cases because I think it's probably borderline, if not completely illegal and against the rules. There's all of that other crap that you always have to do anytime you're using some sort of a toxin, any sort of poison. But it's a bit of a grey area and people are so blasé and willy-nilly with it. The way some people use rat bait and things around their homes, they're just so used to it. They look at it like it's freaking dishwashing liquid or something. I don't know. But people do go nuts with it around huts. And, you know, they'll throw a heap of it under the hut when they leave. I've seen it all through the shelves and under the benches and stuff and all through rubbish and that where I don't know if someone's laid rat bait inside the hut or the rats have brought it, taken it out of a bait station outside and transported it in, because rats will do that. They'll move rat bait around. They'll pick it up and like bury it all in their nest and stuff. I've seen it like pulling stuff apart in an old shed. I remember like pulling an old freezer out of a corner of a shed once and there was a big rat's nest and there was all this hay and crap there. And there was like those big old school egg size, those egg sort of big pellets of rat bait. There's about three or four there and a dead rat, you know, the old like mummified crusty dead rat like in his nest with three or four big chunks of rat bait. So they'll collect it up, you know, it takes them a while to die from it and they'll cart it around and move it all over the place. So as soon as you throw rat bait anywhere in any environment, in one place, in a bait station, in anywhere, it can turn up anywhere, especially anywhere around a building. They can move it and put it anywhere. And I've seen that a lot. I've seen all sorts of crazy stuff with rat bait around huts. I've seen, you know those Cookie Time buckets? Those little buckets that you buy those Cookie Time cookies in? I've seen someone leave a bucket of that full of rat bait under the bench in a hut and the rats chewed through it and just spread rat bait all through the hut. And there's just this half chewed up bucket of rat bait. The bucket was still half full and there was all this rubbish and newspaper and all this crap all under the benches as there often is in remote backcountry huts. And the rats had been nesting all through that and had carted all the rat bait all through that. So we just had to drag everything out and sweep it all up and like have a big fire and stuff. I've seen it over and over, like where there's just rat bait all over the frickin' place in and around huts. And it's really dangerous, particularly with dogs. And it's Bredificum, you know, it's a gnarly poison. And and really toxic to dogs in very small doses. So it's a really good point. And like lots of dogs die every year in New Zealand from rat bait, from exactly that reason, from not so much and only in the bush around huts and that, but just around home. You know, people lay rat bait and their dog eats it and their dog dies. It's really horrible death for a dog too. And so I don't use rat bait at all around home. I haven't for years and years and years. First the biggest thing with rats and mice is good management over and above everything. Like huts being properly vermin proof. Same as buildings around home and that, and just having things clean and tidy, not having for anything that they can eat that really pulls them in, and then also having things tidy and anything that they can use for bedding, have it high up on shelves that they don't get into so much and that, and just having things clean and tidy and nothing they can eat. And then the last line of defense for me is just trapping, real good trapping, and they're not easy to trap. You've got to know how to pre-feed them and know how to set traps properly and all of that, but you can trap them just as effectively, if not more effectively, than you can poison them actually. I am really paranoid and really careful with my dogs around huts because of rat bait and poison, and you just never know if or when it's going to be there because everyone's so bloody willy nilly with it and blasé about it, you know. So I'm really careful with my dogs around huts, and that's why I've always got my chains and my dog chains, and I'd never really leave my dog just wandering around the hut. I don't turn up and just leave my dog wandering. Usually when I arrive at a hut, if I fly in, I'll go and take the dog for a walk if it needs a toilet break or whatever, and then I'll like inspect the area that I'm going to tie my dog up in, have a look, make sure it's clear of bait, make sure there's no rubbish or anything laying around that there could be bait in, and I'm chaining them up on the spot, and then when I let them off the chain, I'm walking them away from the hut. And I'm really paranoid and careful about it because I know how common it is. And not everyone that throws it around writes it in the hut book either, you know. It's widespread enough and I've seen it that much and I'm that careful about it. It's a pain. It is a pain in the ass. It's a real pain in the ass. It really is, and so that's my answer to that, man. Like, what do I do? He says I'm super paranoid about poison baits and bait stations you often find at huts. How do you manage this hazard with your dog? That's what I do, man. I just have, you know, don't let my dog wander. Wherever I tie it up, I inspect the area really carefully and I keep a really good eye on my dog. I don't let them wander around. Anytime they like start sniffing around under the water tank and under the steps and that, I'm like, get out of it. I'm real fussy with my dog scavenging and sniffing around, especially around huts. Also, anytime I'm around someone else's house as well, and they're like, oh, let your dog off, it's fine, you know, and or around buildings, cow sheds, farm buildings and stuff like that, always bloody careful. And I know people that have lost really good hunting dogs due to rat bait, and it just sucks. And it's silly because generally with rats, if the environment is such that they are there, or they are arriving, using poison doesn't usually work. It's usually one of those things that I said earlier. It's if they're coming for a food source, it's making that food source rat-proof. Whether it's, you know, if it's dog biscuits or something like that that are stored in the wrong place and rats turn up, you can't just trap them or poison. They'll just keep coming. You've got to seal that food up. If they're getting into a building, you've got to make it rat-proof. And also bedding's a big one. Bedding's a big one. Leaving everything clean and tidy, no food, no bedding, and preferably no way for them to get in. Frank, another time code. Frank, how do I get the dog to automatically come in behind me when I lift the rifle? So my notes on this is, first of all, I wouldn't do that. Not even in Australia where you can't use suppressors. Yeah, I wouldn't do it, man, because what I would do instead is I just have a hand signal to get the dog in behind anyway. And you train that the same way you train any command, the same way you train any hand signal, the same way you change a command. If I have, it's the same way, and we go over introducing hand signals in the blueprint. We go over that whole big part on it. And print's all on full hand signals. Everything's totally silent if I want to. I've got my verbal commands for if he's not looking at me, and I've got all my hand signals too, including the heel. And to get him in at heel, I just point him behind me, and he knows. It's just I just point behind me, and he knows. It's just like a point down and behind me, and he'll come back and get in heel. He's really good on it. So how you train any hand signal is the same way with any command, really. If my sit command, and by the way, anytime you train any verbal command with a dog, you also use a hand signal as well. You always do both at the same time. So if you're training a stop, I use a flat palm out. So when I'm training my stop command, I'm always doing flat palm out and saying sit, flat palm out, sit. Dogs read body language and visual cues better than they do human verbal commands. So you actually make it easier for them to learn by using good hand signals while you're training a verbal command. If you want to add a hand signal to a verbal command that you already have, it's the same as changing, say, a verbal command into, say, a whistle command. If I've got a recall command, with say, with Miko, like, Miko, come. If I want to put a whistle recall on her and she's already got a really good verbal recall to Miko, come, and I want to change and I want to set up a whistle recall that's a whistle like this, then if I've already got Miko come and she responds to that, I just start doing this. Every time I give my Miko come command, and I'll train for this, I'll go out in a good low distraction environment to start off with and actually run drills on it, and I'll start going, Miko come. And then get her to come over, give good girl, give her a pat and that, sit, tell her to sit, move away. Miko, come. And by the way, my recall's got a hand signal too, which is patting my knee. And I can change that to whatever I want. And if I do that all the time, and Miko's already coming to Miko, come, if every time I, just before I say Miko come, I go, eventually, if it's always Miko come, Miko come, Miko come, and I practice that over and over, eventually you just go, and she comes. Really easy. It's really easy. Once you have a really good command set up with the dog, whether it be hand signal or verbal, you can add another verbal or hand signal command for the same action easily by doing that. You just do what you want the new one to be first and follow with your command straight after that. And whatever you're linking on the front of it, the dog will just start reacting to that because it'll be anticipating the command straight after. And if you've got everything set up well with the dog, and the first time it does come to the whistle, you say, good girl, and then next time, and she'll just come to the whistle. Same with the hand signal. If you've got a heel already set up, like with print, I use get in, and I can't remember 100%, but I'm sure we linked, we definitely showed you how to use hand signals in the blueprint, and I went over those whole principles of, it's the same with the hand signal. If you haven't got a hand signal yet and you want to start setting it up, and you've got, print's got a really good stop command, just saying print sit, and I've got no hand signal, all I do, hand out, flat palm out, nice clear visual cue, do that and say print sit. Put my hand out, say print sit. Put my hand out, say print sit. Eventually you put your hand out and the dog sits and you go, good boy, and there's your hand signal. And you practice that a few times, few sessions, but they get it quick. Like a dog that's got a really good sit command, verbal sit command, not a hand signal, I'll get them sitting to a hand signal in one session. I'll get them picking it up in one session. I want to do a few more to make sure it's solid, but they pick it up real quick. So to get the dog going in behind, and I'll explain why I wouldn't want it going in behind when you lift the rifle soon, but to get the dog going in behind on a heel, and I'm pretty sure I went over this in the blueprint, I'm almost positive I would have, with Prince, heel command is get in, and I say get in and point behind me at the same time. Get in, point behind me. So that's his heel command. Point behind me. And I can be out hunting and print can be in front. If I want him to get in behind, he'll be 5-10 meters in front of me. If I point down behind me, he comes back to me and gets in behind. Or if I touch my leg, pat my thigh, he'll come back behind me, and then I can point behind me and tell him to get behind me. More often than not, if I'm stalking and he's in front and I want him to get in behind, I'll just use my hand signal sit command. It's sort of flat palm out and then like point down to get him to sit. And then when I catch up to him, I'll point him in behind just by pointing like down and behind me, and he just flicks straight in behind, all silent, hand signals. So I just have it on a hand signal, Frank. It's real easy for me to get print behind whenever I want. I wouldn't want him automatically getting in behind when I lift the rifle. Because while I'm hunting, I'm quite often lifting the rifle when I'm not intending to shoot and when I don't want the dog to go in behind. Quite often I'm just adjust the magnification on my scope and lift the rifle up and look through my scope, make sure all my magnification's good. If it's been raining or even dusty or anything, I'll often check my glass. It's just a habit. Just while I'm hunting, just look through my scope. Make sure my scope's clean, make sure there's no water on the lens, nothing. Quite often I think I see something that looks like a deer and I'll check it through the scope. I'll look through the scope to see what it is. I'll look through the scope like to look at a slip far away. I'm often lifting the rifle. Obviously, it's always safety in mind with this sort of thing. I'm not just willy-nilly lifting my rifle up and pointing at random stuff. But yeah, when I first saw this question, Frank, I just thought about it and I thought, man, that I would not want to have my dog. I would not want a dog that every time I lift my rifle, the dog's trying to move and come in behind me. That's just, I just wouldn't want that. And the thing, I get it. I get why you've thought of that idea with not being able to use suppressors in Australia, and so with how loud unsuppressed guns are, and it's hard on your dog's ears and all that sort of stuff. But the thing is exactly what I just explained, man. I wouldn't want my dog automatically trying to get in behind me every time I lift the gun. And I just think it's going to be easier just having a command that you can point the dog in behind you. It's going to come back in behind just as fast. You're never going to get that dog coming in behind when you lift the gun like so automatic in the field that the moment it comes up, the dog's just scrambling in behind you. You're going to have to put so much pressure on the dog to do that and make it. Yeah, I just wouldn't do it. It could be quite problematic and niggly, I think, because you're going to have to make sure that the dog can see you and that it's listening and that it's actually coming back. So even in that scenario where I've seen a deer, I need to take a shot as fast as possible, but I don't want to take the shot until the dog's in behind, I'm actually going to be way better off just using that hand signal and pointing the dog in behind and getting it coming back and then up and shooting the deer than lifting the rifle and the dog automatically coming back. And then you can lift your rifle without the dog wanting to come back, you know. Yeah, that's my answer to that, man. I hope that makes sense. Sweet, everybody, that's it. Like I said, just a quick one. I kept it sort of short, and we'll see you in the next one.